Episode 16. Welcome to episode 16 of Thinking Habits Podcast. Thanks for the feedback for last week's with Dan and with toys in mind. Although I'm not sure how long it's going to take me to get over the shame and ignominy of mistaking Carnage and Venom. Once again, very sorry. I need to catch up on my comics. One thing that's come up from that episode, our friend Kelly put us on to a film called Marwyn Cole, which I'd never heard of before. And the blurb is thus, after recovering from a brutal attack that left him in a coma, Mark Hogenkamp builds a miniature World War II era town in his backyard and creates photographic stories of its intrigues. He does this using G.I. Joe figures, and the imagery that he's created in this piece is incredible. I'm looking forward to watching it. I've not seen it yet, but it's on my watch list. It's stunning, but the fact that the toy photography sort of genre goes so deep is absolutely incredible. So look out for that, Marwyn Cole. It's on Amazon, I think. Is it on Amazon Prime? It's on somewhere. I'll put a link up to it on the podcast anyway. So thanks to Kelly for putting us in touch with that. Also, we had a bit of feedback on the sports and mental health, the exercise and mental health episode. Katie pointed out that people with a diagnosis or an undiagnosed autistic spectrum disorder and or other disorders might not get the same benefit of team sports or team education, ethics in sport, in schools where that was not widely understood. Now, that resonates with me a little bit. I didn't really participate in the team sports because I couldn't, because of physical issues. And that in itself was enough to have me not intentionally isolated, but isolated. Pam's nodding in front of
yes,
me.
Yes, I struggled with team sports because I wasn't ever traditionally sporty. I did physical activity out of school. I did a lot of dancing, activities like that, but I would... because I wasn't good at team sports, like things like hockey, netball, and I found the whole, thinking back at the whole situation was pretty stressful, and things like being picked for teams, there's all kinds of anxiety triggers in there, and I think that's something that a lot of people can relate to.
There's a Craig Charles. Obviously, Craig Charles started his career as a poet. One of his most famous poems as a young poet was about being picked last for games. And that really resonated for me because that was around about the time when I was repeatedly being picked last for games. But I couldn't do it.
I have very clear memories of, picking... and it was always the people who were best at the sport. So if it was hockey, it would be the people who played for... I think there was a Southport team or, who were members of external hockey clubs, who were really good and would always be in the inter-form teams and what have you. And they'd be picked as the captains, which was fair enough. Mm. But there was never anything said about inclusiveness and stuff. So they'd pick their mates first, which, your kids, that happens. But I have very clear memories of more than one time being... oh, I suppose we'll have Pamela then.
Yeah,
because I was left.
I was very much the dead weight on a team.
I wasn't that much worse than other people. I think there was a lot of popularity stuff in that, which was,13-year-old girls, 14-year-old girls can be horrible.
Yeah.
And so I think there was a lot of that, but I think compounded with the fact that I was a lot smarter, I wasn't particularly good at sports like that.
Mm.
I think, but yes, I can very much understand.
But I think the whole
being quite stressful and triggering anxiety.
Yeah, but the whole sensitivity towards inclusivity in schools nowadays is far more approached and accepted.
Yes.
That it's really, really important and necessary. Whereas, you know, when I was at secondary school, it was, you know, it was still like 1989, and one of the gym tutors, Mr. Mackay, his name was, and he was like ex-army.
Right.
You know, and he used to just stand there on the sidelines yelling at us, smoking a fag. So, right. You know, it was a different time, and I don't think they, and that's never, you know, it was a different time has been used in the press for a number of nefarious reasons, and I don't think that's an excuse, but it needs to be understood that we come to a point where we are more educated, but that's not to say that people were willfully ignorant back then.
No.
They were ignorant. But that's why we learn new things and we change our perspectives and we move forward. I do think that I would be much more sporty now if I had access to the sports facilities and knowledge about you know, inclusive sports then as we do in 2018.
Oh, yeah,
but we didn't. So
definitely,
you know,
agree with you on that. I think and I hope that, you know, it's something that people who are kids today and are going through that sort of stage of development can benefit from. And I hope that it's something that can continue rather than something that falls by the wayside with educational cuts and things.
Yeah.
But again,
that's another minefield to cross in another day. So onto the episode in question. Pam has the floor today, and Pam's got a few things that she wanted to bring up, so I will leave it to you.
Yeah, okay. Well, hello. So I wanted to talk about a couple of things. Firstly, I was recently referred to for counselling, and it's probably something that's been coming for a long time, but it happened at a routine checkup at a medication check at the doctor's, and the doctor, it wasn't my usual doctor who I saw, and she pointed out that I was on, she was on 2 antidepressants, and obviously once we went a little bit further into my medical history, realised that one of them isn't actually prescribed as an antidepressant. However, she noticed that the citalopram, which I do take for its main prescribed purpose.
Mm-hmm. Citalopram being an SSRI antidepressant.
Yes, the other one that I'm on is duloxetine, which is an older antidepressant, but it's also good for treating nerve pain, and it's often prescribed in conjunction with gabapentin for use, especially at night, because it seems to enhance the pain-killing effects. Amitriptyline is used for the same thing. It's another older antidepressant, and I can't remember what category those fall into.
Tricyclic,
right. I tried that, it didn't agree with me, so hence the duloxetine. But she pointed out that I'd been on citalopram for quite a long time and asked if I'd ever had any ever been referred for talking therapy. I haven't. I think I was offered it a few years ago, but at the time it wasn't something that I really wanted to go into. But this time I said, yes, I think it probably would help me. And I got my referral through very quickly. I think my doctor's appointment was about a week ago, and I got a referral letter through yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
With an introduction to the services, and phoned up and booked an appointment. The initial consultation is done over the phone, and then they refer you. It's about an hour's phone call, and then they refer you to whatever type of therapy will be best for you. And it seems that the options are CBT, cognitive behavioural therapy, or counselling. And then there's other resources available. I didn't realise that there's resources available. There's drop-in groups that I haven't actually looked into yet, but you don't need a referral to go to those, and that's 2-hour sessions for people with anxiety issues in the Trafford area. So I will be looking into those and finding out. Give it a try. I think that that's just group talking therapy. But I will keep it, you know, drop in from time to time and update on how things are going with that. And I'd be, you know, if anyone else is willing to share their own experience, obviously without going into specific detail of issues, you know, not asking for everyone to share things they're not comfortable with, but it'd be interesting to know what benefits people got from it, because at the moment I'm still a little bit unsure. It's still a bit of the unknown to
apprehensive
me.
About it.
Yeah, apprehensive is the right word.
Well, see, I think, I mean, you've had your diagnosis of MS for 11 years? 10 years?
11 years.
And counselling was offered right at the start. The support groups and stuff was offered quite early on. But it's something that you've never really felt was something that you wanted to do for a number of reasons. I think one, for me, I mean, as an outsider looking in, there is a certain sense of innate stoicism. There's a very much a I can deal with this myself kind of thing that, that's got you through a lot of really, really rough relapses as well.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think what I've noticed in recent years is that you have dipped into the sort of social media, put my foot into, just see where I sit in that, get things that I feel are useful to me and leave the stuff that isn't.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that's changed over the years. And I think that's more, again, outside looking in, you finding your path in your own terms. But as far as talking therapies go, that's something that you've been kind of mulling over for a little while, isn't it?
Yeah, because I think for a long time when it was offered, I was very much of the opinion or belief that well, I can cope with this right now, and I'm doing okay, and got day to day stuff, and day to day is fine. Well, not always fine, but I can cope with it. If I start some kind of talking therapy and open that can of worms, is it just going to make me feel worse? When I was at college, A-level age, I went to the college counsellor over some issues, and I don't know whether it was just that I didn't follow it. Maybe it would have got better if I'd followed it up, but I had an initial session and I felt like the counsellor pretty much just said, I mean, I'm very much paraphrasing, I can't remember exactly what she said, but I came out feeling like she just said, oh, well, that's just awful. I don't know what you're going to do. That just sounds terrible. And I didn't feel like I'd been given anything nothing to go away and think about. It just sounded like, well, yeah, that is pretty terrible. Well, you might as well, you know, and you might as well just give up. I don't know how you can fix that. And of course, it wasn't what she wouldn't have said. That wouldn't have been what she said. But it's what the,
no. If you're already if you're already vulnerable and you're in a position where you're seeking somebody's help, and what you get is just a reflection verbatim of what you said back to you, that's not helpful.
No, and I think probably what I needed at the time was for her to say, yeah, it isn't a nice time at the moment, but it will get better, and to give me some resources or some coping mechanisms to help it get better. And as it was, I ended up dropping out of that college, and here I am today. But that wasn't the only reason, but I didn't have a good experience of counselling, so I think part of my mind was reflecting back on that and thinking, well, it's never helped me before. And again, there's the whole, if I open that box and start to unpack things, am I going to be able to cope with that? Because maybe I won't.
Maybe you won't, and it's different for different people. But from my, I mean, I talked about this a few times. I think episode 2 was the one where I really unpacked it. But I got to the point where I realised that that box was getting bigger, and the box was bigger than the stuff that wasn't in the box. So I thought, well, I need to start redressing the balance here. I mean, you've been through me through all of that.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And the first time I went to counselling and I thought I'd done what I needed to do, but basically what I'd done was I'd basically put, I opened the box like a crack and pulled a couple of things out of the box and dealt with them and then shut that box again. Because that's what I thought I needed.
Yeah.
But that doesn't work because the box is still there.
Yeah.
And the stuff that you're unpacking, you if you choose the things that come out of there, this is all metaphorical but this is, that's how I find it easier to explain. If you choose the things that come out of that box, you will inevitably leave things behind that are relevant.
Yeah.
And that things are connected in ways you don't necessarily realize they're connected.
Yeah.
So the only real way of getting to that is for me, not for everyone, but for me, was to just open the box and go, fuck it.
Tip it all out.
Let's go. Let's have this because otherwise, the box becomes the thing that everything revolves around.
I think of it more as a box that stays the same size, but it's getting harder and harder to shut the lid on it.
Yeah.
And there's the metaphor of if you have a bucket that's full to the brim,
mm-hmm.
and you keep pouring into it and it overflows.
Yeah.
You poke a tiny hole in the bottom, but the water's still pouring in, it's still going to overflow.
Yeah. But maybe that you're identifying that. Maybe that means you are ready. Maybe.
Yeah,
you
know. Maybe, yeah. Well, we'll see.
So what's the timescale?
I've got my initial consultation call in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And then it depends on what service I get referred to from whatever they think will be best for me.
In my experience from both doing those calls and having those calls, it's not necessarily what they think is best, but they're not going to force you down a route you don't want to go down. They'll say, this is what we would recommend.
Yeah.
But, you know, the last time I was off, they recommended CBT for me, and I said no. I said no because I've tried CBT and it doesn't work for me. It's not worked for me the 3 or 4 times I've tried it. Plus, I was also trained in delivering it, and I felt like I was unpicking it, and it was becoming fractal to me. It lost all its
forward guessing.
Yeah, it lost all its impetus.
Yeah.
What I felt I needed to do was have a dialogue with somebody about my issues.
Yeah.
For me, that worked. For some people, CBT has been an absolute life changer.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, it's sometimes seen, certainly by government, as a bit of a panacea. Because they see how effective it is for some people, and they think, all right, well, one, it's effective. Two, it works in the short term. Three, it's cheap.
I think that it's the same with a lot of approaches to different health issues. They'll take what's the most cost effective way of delivering to the most people.
Yeah, so, and that's, you know,
obviously
that's how it should be, really.
Yeah, that's how. Yeah, but yeah, hopefully I will get somewhere with it, and hopefully I'll get on with the counsellor who calls me, and we'll see where it goes from there. They said the waiting time from that initial call depends very much on what kind of therapy we decide on.
Mm.
So from the literature I was sent, the talking therapies have the counselling has a slightly longer waiting list, and so I think the CBT is almost the first option.
Yeah,
but we'll see.
But you can also do CBT online as well, so that cuts the waiting list down.
Yeah, they did say there's the online service. But that kind of brings me to the other topic that I wanted to talk about and open up for definite contribution. If people would like us to talk about one specific aspect of it, is the increase in social media and use of the internet in general. There's, you know, the self-help book has been around. Self-help books have been around for years and longer than my lifetime. I think there's a bit of a sort of stereotype about the self-help book. that there's a certain type of people. People buy them. How that you can have a bookshelf full of self-help books and nothing changes because they just sit on the shelf.
Mm.
You read the back cover, you read the first chapter, and then you think, oh, I'll go back to it. Because most of them, it's pretty dry reading,
mm.
and they can come across as superior. You know, telling you all the things you're doing wrong. And if you're feeling depressed and anxious and unsure of yourself, probably the last thing you need is to read a book telling you just how wrong you're getting it and how other people are doing it better.
Yeah.
And now with the internet, social media forums, and app, smartphone apps. If you just go to, I use the Play Store because I'm on Android, but I'm sure the App Store is the same. If you just type in self-help and you just get lists and lists of apps with all different ratings on, and I think a bonus of that is that people can say, yeah, this is really useful, I like this and this. There's a few that I saw that had 1-star ratings, and it wasn't just one star. It was an aggregate. So, there's all kinds on there. I mean, I've used certain apps for a long time, like diet monitoring. The Fitbit app is really useful, and I suppose things like, you know, diet apps could come under self help, because
I suppose it can. I use one called Dailyo, Daylio, which is just how do you feel today? What have you done today?
Yeah.
And any notes. That's it.
Yeah.
And you can set your you can set your different emotions to sort of great, or I think they use rad.
Because
it's American. The rad, you know, meh. Rad,
good, meh.
Good, awful, tired, that kind of thing. And then you kind of set yourself a smiley face to basically catalogue how you're feeling, and then you set what kind of activities. So for me, on my activities, I've got ate a good meal, did some exercise, did some MMA, did some origami, did some podcasting, listened to audiobooks, did some reading, that kind of thing. At the moment, looking for jobs, you know, that kind of stuff. So I log that, and then there's a notes field to catalogue things that you've done. And for me, it's quite nice because I've been doing it for 3 months now, and it's something that I took on at the same time as doing as episode one of this podcast. I took that app on and I started doing the bullet journaling. And what I've noticed is the bullet journaling has slowed down, whereas the app has carried on. And I think that's one, because I've got my phone pretty much glued to my hand most of the time, unless I'm doing origami.
There is a bullet journal app now, which I've not tried, but because it's only just been launched on Android.
Right.
But
that might be worth trying.
Yeah, I'm going to have a look at that.
But it's interesting with the Dailyo to be able to look back over those 3 months and actually see the spikes and see, right, so if I do a lot of this, then I often have a dip. And if I do these things, I often stay...
Yeah, I was using...
I stay rad for more than... I don't think I've been rad for more than like 5 days, because then I get tired.
Yeah.
And I think that's just because I'm 42. It's not necessarily because I'm just not cool enough. but it's useful. It's interesting. And
you've not been wearing your hat backwards.
No.
That's what I think of when I see the rad.
Radical. Like, what's the name of the dog in The Simpsons that they add into Itchy and Scratchy? Is it Itchy, Scratchy and Poochie?
I can't remember.
And he's got sunglasses and he wears board shorts and starts rapping.
Yeah, see, that's exactly what I'm thinking about.
Pretty much. Well, that was me for 3 days this week, so I'm quite happy with that.
Yeah.
But
the board shorts, I did notice the board shorts. So that's what that was all about.
Yeah, I just didn't want to say anything. But the idea of a self-help app, that's on a certain level of self-help. There's other ones where you can join live conversations with people who are struggling.
Yeah.
I think that was one that you pointed out.
Yeah, there's an MS one that's not an app, that's a website. They've got a mobile site. I don't think there's an app. I haven't been able to find it if there is.
Right.
So I'm assuming there isn't. But that's I kind of dip in and out of that because it's aimed at people who are newly diagnosed, but it would make sense for the advertising to be aimed, because I would imagine that either people who are with any long-term condition, if you're newly diagnosed or you've just had a significant change in your diagnosis, in your prognosis or your diagnosis, then it would make sense that they're the people who would be more likely looking for resources.
Absolutely.
So another update on that is that I've got my appointment on Monday at the hospital, and I'll be able to talk about, I can talk about mood and stuff in that, because obviously the different medications can affect your mood, and fingers crossed I'll be changing medication soon and won't have to do injections anymore.
Hooray!
Because that's been my life for 9 years. I found out last time I went to the hospital. I was like, oh, yeah, I've been doing these for quite a while now. Well, it's actually the whole time since October 2007. I've been doing injections. But this particular medication has been the past 9 years. Those apps, there's the live, the real-time ones, and there's I know there's a counselling one where you can talk in real time
to a counsellor.
Obviously, they're more paid apps, and I don't know what the subscriptions are on those. And I think face-to-face conversation, although I'm not always very good at it, I think one-on-one conversation I'm much better at than group talking, because I tend to, if I'm in a group, I tend to like to, or I need to sort of observe the dynamic before I go straight in. If I'm asked to start something in a group situation, very much like presenting in front of people, that's when I clam up and my mouth goes dry and I forget everything that I was going to say and I start stammering and stumbling, and I don't know.
And apprehension about that happening can often be just as bad, can't it?
Yeah. And I think in terms of an app such as Think, everyone knows that it's very easy to misread a text. The intention, or an email. And I personally think that an app, talking about counselling, it would be very hard to get your point across without writing reams and reams. I've looked at the adverts for it, and it seems to be like having a chat conversation with someone, and you know, maybe it could help, but I would think you'd need to go into a bit more depth.
Well, I think
just because I talk a lot.
The app that you put me onto, I think it was you that put me onto, was an app called Wisdo.
No, it wasn't me.
Was it not you? It says the strap line is learn from people who've been there. And basically you log on and you post a question, like there's different boards for, there's different like boards you can join, like parenting boards and social anxiety boards and ADHD boards, and then you post a message up and then people can comment underneath, and so the idea of it is quite useful.
Yeah.
What I found with the app though, when I looked at it, which unfortunately I have found with a number of groups and social platforms, is that some people use these things more than others.
Yeah.
Some people post more often than other people. Some people feel more comfortable sharing their stories more openly and more loquaciously than others.
Yeah.
And what that means is that some people end up shying away from online support groups because their voice doesn't necessarily get heard, because other people's voices are louder and end up taking up more of the resources of the peer group that they're trying to seek help from.
Yeah, that's very much been my experience with any type of forum, is that there's always going to be some people who are more active on it, and people then start to, like, they'll recognise the username, they recognise their content, and they'll have people, you know, because I think with most, what you can follow specific users, so people will follow their content, and it's not necessarily always good, or there's always, you know, it's not necessarily always good content that they're giving or valuable content, and I think that other people who might actually need, really, you know, be more in need of the support, and they don't feel like they can talk to anyone else, an anonymous forum is the best, would be the best platform, and they don't necessarily get heard or seen, and I think that that can be a downfall of these type of things, because people can get a little bit self-important on it and think that they can direct that. It's like, well, I don't want to talk about that topic. So, okay, go on a different thread then.
Yeah,
but then they monopolise the.
But I think it's important to stress is that that kind of experience and that kind of behaviour is the same on whether you're on a board talking about pet tortoises or Fortnite or remote control cars or mental health. There will always be a dynamic where there are people who are louder and take up a lot of the available real estate on that board.
Yeah.
Where it becomes problematic, I think, is when you are talking about sensitive topics where people are vulnerable and people are possibly quite raw, dealing with very sensitive topics and subjects, and you get people who, and I say this as somebody who's witnessed this many times, run roughshod over a thread to the detriment of people who are trying to get their voices heard.
Yeah.
And that's what pushes people away from social media forums. The problem is that moderating that is almost impossible.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you start moderating that, the people who are running roughshod over those conversations then inevitably will feel that their voice isn't as valid, or they will start to feel attacked, and that's when you start getting factions and you start getting groups versus groups, and it becomes and then the point of the forum is lost. And I've seen really, really good forums being built up from the ground up crash into a million pieces because they're poorly moderated or unmoderated or
overly moderated
sometimes, but also that it becomes the voice box / soapbox for 5% of the group to the detriment of the other 95%. The other 95% leave because they're not getting the support that that group was there to set out to do. So there's no point in being there.
No.
Which is sad. It's really sad. You know, I used to be on a few OCD groups and depression groups a few years ago. Very much a lurker. Never really posted. It was more sort of just sort of seeing what the kind of, I would search for posts that resonated with me to see what other people did. And it just became so noisy that there was no point.
Yeah. I think there can also be a tendency for, on a group like that, there's I mean, I see it a little bit in some of the MS groups that I'm members of, it is that people forget that it's what you're experiencing is personal to you, and just because someone else has got it worse, you know, there'll be a lot of like one-upmanship on how bad you're feeling today. It's like, oh, I've just coming out of a relapse, and I've had steroids, and I feel rubbish. And yeah, it is rubbish.
Mm.
And really, all they need is people to go, oh yeah, I feel for you. I've been there. You know, it'll pass. You've just got a couple of days of feeling rubbish, and then hopefully you'll start to feel better. Mm. And the steroids have done their job, etc. But what you get is people going, oh well, I've had a course of steroids and they've done nothing, and now I've got permanent damage to my arm or something, which is horrible. But that's not what the start of the thread was. It was someone wanting to just have a bit of a moan because they were feeling the physical problems they're having and medications and everything is just making them feel miserable. And you know whatever anyone else has going on doesn't make them feel any better.
Yeah.
Telling someone how much worse off you are doesn't make them feel better about it.
No.
And yeah, you get into the into this sort of one-upmanship of, oh well, I've got it so much worse than you, so you should just be quiet.
Yeah.
And I think that goes across a lot of different, and that's I think that can be the danger of self. When you're
peer just, support as well.
Peer support, yeah, that's what I was looking for. Thank you. Because you know, I should have started all this by saying, you know, I have no mental health qualifications at all. I'm very much an amateur talking about my personal experience and bits of knowledge that I've picked up from Simon, from his training and his work experience, and obviously his own personal experiences that I've witnessed. So everything I'm saying here is very much my opinion and should not be taken as advice or anything. But now I've got through that little caveat that should have gone in at the beginning.
No, it's important. It is important to note that, you know, when we're talking, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of self-help groups, which are incredible, and they do exactly what they're designed to. They're well moderated. They're well policed is the wrong word, but they're well supported.
Yeah.
They are a friendly, relaxed, safe environment for people to share experiences. But in all of those environments, inevitably there will be flashpoints because people are people.
Yeah.
And people don't get on with everybody. You don't get on with everybody you know, let alone people you've never met before, when you add the nuances of being behind a keyboard.
Yeah.
The problem is made infinitely more acute when that is in an environment where people are already vulnerable, already paranoid, and already feeling anxious.
Yeah, I think anxiety and paranoia can go very much hand in hand.
Mm.
And there's, you know, writing a post on a forum message board about anxiety and retyping it because of, oh, does that, you know, how are people going to perceive it, and are they just going to think I'm whinging, or is that going to be seen as attacking a certain section of people, or and there's just so many things. And you know, there's the whole thing about taking a three-line email response taking half an hour to write because you need to make sure that your point is understood and that it can't be misconstrued in any way.
Yeah.
And
I sometimes wish that I didn't do that. Yeah. I do that with WhatsApp messages.
Oh,
do you
gosh,
know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But then sometimes I'm glad I do, because I've seen when people don't do that and they just throw out a message and it causes all kinds of problems, and then they have to explain themselves and they said, well, why didn't you say it like this? Because you avoid a lot of drama. But the problem is that what you're doing when you're reviewing all these things over and over and over and over and over again is that you're internalising all that drama before it's even happened.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you see it on Facebook, not necessarily in a Facebook group, but on your own wall.
Yeah.
You can get people commenting underneath each other and they don't necessarily understand the nuances of what the friend above them has posted in terms of your post.
Yeah.
And I've had a couple of instances in the last few months where people have posted a comment. I know what that comment means.
Yeah.
I liked it or laughing faced it, but the person underneath,
a mutual friend
who doesn't necessarily know person A, has gone in with a comment that's basically saying, what the hell does that mean?
Yeah.
You know, and it started a bit of a
flame war.
Well, yeah, a bit of a flame war. And you just think, right, okay, this is where social media, this is a relatively new problem.
Yeah.
Since, you know, 20 odd years since the, you know, message boards and internet kind of really got into its own. I mean, I remember the old alt dot, you know, alt dot X files dot episodes dot chat and stuff like that. You know, it was basically pictures of Gillian Anderson. Let's be real. But the narrative of having those conversations over text without the nuances of language and voice and eye contact and things like that means that things get misconstrued, especially when your phone is in your hand all the time, you're in the pub, you've been out for a few, you're on this thing, you're not necessarily thinking exactly about what you're typing, then all of a sudden it causes these problems.
You can be in a certain mood because you're interacting with people who aren't with you whilst you're also interacting with people who are with you.
Yeah.
And you transfer your... You might be getting a bit giddy. There might be a few of you having a few drinks. You're all getting a bit giddy and a bit silly. And you comment on something that they've got no idea what's going on. And they read it and they're like, oh, that's a bit off.
Yeah, and that's the problem. Everything's so lightning quick nowadays that you can get into trouble very quickly. And again, with online support groups, they're not very nuanced.
No.
Are they? And they can be difficult.
Yeah.
I don't tend to use them personally. I find them... I've dipped in a few times. I find them difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't... But I never used to really post anyway. No. Because I can see how dangerous they can be.
Yeah, I don't post too often unless I've got either a specific question that I would like information on, or that's more rare actually, or I can directly answer if someone else has asked for, like, has anyone been taking this medication? What was it like? You know, then I'll say, this is how I found it. Mm. Like, it's been great, or it didn't work for me. Like, there was a question I answered recently about amantadine, which is the drug that I take for fatigue, which I don't think is working for me anymore. And I was able, you know, said I've been on it for about 4 years. For 4 years, it was brilliant. But I was told that it doesn't work for everyone, and I think it's not working for me anymore.
Yeah.
But
and it doesn't work for everybody forever. I think that's a point,
But I didn't experience any particularly nasty side effects, so I would say it's a positive, but I'm not, you know, I'm not going to tell you one way or the other.
Mm.
But there will be people who go, oh no, steer clear of that. I took it, or I know someone who took it and this happened. And they'll say that as no one should ever take it. Mm. And I, you know, so the advice given isn't always healthy. People will be saying you should do this and you must do that, and they're only going off their own experience. They're not.
Yeah, and if they've had a terrible time, they're going to want to warn people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, there's nothing wrong with that. But I always try and steer clear of of looking like I'm telling people what to do, because, you know, I'm not qualified to tell. I can only say how I've experienced it, or if I do know what other people have told me. You know, it worked for me. I know someone else who it didn't work for. Something like that.
No, absolutely. I mean, going back to, you were talking about amitriptyline before.
Mm.
One thing that I was going to say at the end, tag it on at the end, but it's kind of relevant really that we talk about it now, is that amitriptyline is a tricyclic antidepressant. Now, we need to just explain what a tricyclic antidepressant is.
Yeah, because I don't really know.
The reason why it's called a tricyclic antidepressant is just because it's named after their chemical structure, because the chemical structure contains three rings of atoms, so it's tricyclic. As opposed to,
I always thought it was something to do with sort of cycles that your body would go through.
No, it's just on the shape.
Right.
So that's just somebody with.
Oh wow! Today but
it's
I
used it, absolutely. It's used to treat so many different things: mood disorders, dysthymia, which is sort of persistent low mood, persistent depressive disorder. It's used to treat OCD, anxiety, neuropathic pain. My mum used to take it for leg spasms. It's used to. It has been used to treat borderline personality disorder, ADHD, Parkinson's, chronic pain, nocturnal enuresis, bedwetting,
oh.
Narcolepsy, chronic hiccups, even. But and I was on an SSRI called Doxepin when I first got diagnosed with depression. A tricyclic.
Yeah,
I was getting confused. A tricyclic called Doxepin, and it was awful for me. I absolutely hated it. I was on it for a month, and it felt like the whole world around me was shrinking, and I was absolutely tiny but absolutely huge at the same time. I felt like I couldn't move in the space that I was in. It was really weird. And I remember once
I had similar feelings of that in the first few weeks when I took Ziroxat years ago.
See, Ziroxat's hardcore. That's an old school antidepressant as well. But
it worked for me for a long time.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, it did. You were on that phrase, weren't you? I went to the pub, and I was stood by the bar. It was an old pub called O'Neill's in Harrogate, and it's a kitchen shop now, boo. But I was in the pub, and there was a fruit machine by the door, and then you went up the stairs to the toilet. So I was just there by the bar, and it was rammed. It was absolutely rammed.
Mm-hmm.
But I suddenly, out of nowhere, got this, like, you know that focus pull bit in Jaws where they zoom in on Roy Scheider's face, but they're pulling away at the same time.
Yeah,
and it's like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
It was like that.
And mad perspective.
And at that point in that pub, it felt like everybody around me had just turned to stare at me and was just looking at me, and I bolted. I bolted out the pub. I went home and I never took it again. I said, I cannot take this anymore. It's making me feel so anxious. I just want to hide from the entire world. Yeah, I had a full on, and that's one of the first and only real proper doozy panic attacks I've ever had.
Yeah.
But then they put me on Prozac instead, and I was fine on that for like 12 years.
Yeah, you're still taking that.
But for me, I know lots of people who took that, and it was absolutely brilliant for them.
Yeah.
So reflecting on what we were talking about on message boards, I would be reluctant to pronounce that nobody should take this drug.
Yeah.
Because this drug might work for you. Didn't for me.
Mm.
It was awful for me.
Yeah.
I know people who took beta blockers, and it's the best thing that's ever happened to them. I was given beta blockers, which lower your blood pressure.
Yeah.
It's used for anxiety, and it's also used for high blood pressure. And it just made me feel like a zombie. It was horrible.
Did you have high blood pressure?
No.
No.
It just made me feel like a total zombie. But another example, but I wouldn't tell people not to take them just because of what's happened to me.
Yeah.
Different. Everybody's different. I absolutely recommend CBT for some people. I absolutely recommend exercise for some people.
Yeah.
I would absolutely recommend SSRIs for some people.
Yeah.
Tricyclics for some people. There is no drug that is a panacea, a cure-all. If there was, we'd all be tickety-boo, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
So people are different. Yeah. Some people are allergic to strawberries. Some people are allergic to bees. I'm allergic to cats. You're allergic to dogs, which is why we've got a rabbit who's giving me side-eye at the moment. But that's the point.
Yeah.
And I think it becomes dangerous when a loud voice on a board where people are vulnerable can then dictate
keyboard
the mood
warriors.
Of that board. Yeah, and then you get the keyboard warriors in. But I think the fact that we've spent 50 minutes very, very carefully tiptoeing around the fact that some people ruin it for other people, which is the bottom line of this.
Yeah.
But that permeates through everything, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it, there's, you know, it's like, you know, there's not, you say there isn't a panacea. It's like when you see posts that people share, which I think can be very dangerous, when there's one that does the rounds every so often, and it's the two pictures, and there's a picture of loads of pills, and there's a picture of like a beautiful landscape, and it's like, this isn't an antidepressant, over pills, this is an antidepressant, and it's like a really nice footpath going through.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, you do feel better when you go for a nice walk, but you've covered in many, and you've covered it and then touched on it in.
But let's be clear, I needed the medicine in order to put my shoes on.
Yeah, yeah, so, exactly. So some people do have that chemical imbalance, and without medical assistance, until there's some breakthrough, that you will never have the right chemical balance without taking an artificial, you know, version of it. And of course it would be better if no one needed to take medicine as antidepressants.
Mm.
You know, I don't think anyone likes having to take medicine. I think that there's some people who have a certain amount of, can have a certain amount of pride in, it's like, oh, well, I've got to take this in. And it's like, it's not, it's a pain. I'd love to be able to go on holiday without taking a big bag of pills with me and having to explain why I've
explain to customs why you've got syringes in your bag. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it's, that's difficult.
Yeah, but, you know, it's, I think, and it's just another thing, like, you know, exercise can help, talking can help, taking a tablet isn't necessarily going to, it's not going to make everything okay, but it will, it should give you, if it's the right one for you, it should give you the leg up to be able to start doing something about it. And, you know, it's like, the going back to the self-help apps, they're not necessarily all interactive. I mean, there's one that I've downloaded, which is just different guided meditations, and that's really nice. And there's some of like self-affirmation ones. So it basically just telling you how to believe in yourself and mantras to repeat. Does very much bring to mind the scene in Friends where Chandler's listening to the self-help tape. I'm a strong, confident woman who does not need to smoke.
Yeah.
Some of them are a bit like that.
Right.
But there's also really nice body scans and relaxation and calming anxiety. And, you know, that is, you just choose which one you want. You download it onto your phone or your tablet or whatever platform and listen to it and take it in. And so I think things like that can be great, and I think it's just another aspect, just another kind of piece of the puzzle in trying to feel better about things.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I'm just thinking about tacking something on here, which I think we've touched on, and I very much want to go into this in more detail because there's a lot to unpick in this. But one of the things that comes up in a lot of these talking groups and apps and therapies is the idea of the sick role.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the sick role was coined by an American sociologist, Talcott Parsons, in the 1950s. And basically, the general tenet states that the individual who has fallen ill is not only physically sick, but now adheres to the specific patterned social role of being sick. So the theory outlines the rights of a sick person and also their obligations. So the sick person is exempt from normal social roles. The sick person is not necessarily responsible for their condition, but their obligations are the sick person should try to get well, and the sick person should seek technically competent help to cooperate with the medical professional. Now, my personal observation is that there are some people who fall into that deeply and adopt the sick role so that their illness defines them as a person.
Yeah, it's almost like if I get better, people won't love me anymore.
There is a bit of that. But the problem with the sick role is, and I've seen people talk about the dysfunctionality of support groups and talking message boards because people are wallowing inverted commas in the sick role. However, that runs the risk of blaming the sick, for example.
Yeah.
Very much so. Rights and you know, and the exemption of rights don't always apply to all illnesses. And sometimes the individual in question is held responsible for that illness. So societally, alcoholism, drug abuse, that kind of thing. The model fits acute
addictions in general.
Absolutely. Yeah. The model fits acute illnesses, measles, appendicitis, relatively short-term things. Inverted commas, man flu.
Yeah.
I am very much a wallower in the sick role, voluntarily and willingly, when I've got flu. I will absolutely adopt the fact that I cannot and will not do anything while I'm ill. Now, from the outside of that, that could be perceived as me being defined by my illness. But if you've got MS, it doesn't fit a chronic or long-term permanent illness as easily as with, you know, blindness or diabetes, that kind of thing. So people who are blindly negative about support groups need to bear in mind that that doesn't necessarily fit every box. There's a big Venn diagram.
I think support groups can give people it's like you can talk to people who understand. You know, even if they don't know exactly what you're going through, they can understand a bit about what you're going through, and it's very much a place to. I think it can be seen as a place to unburden, so you don't feel like you're being defined by you. You can function more normally amongst your social groups, and it might turn out that you end up forming friendships in these support groups, but. The support group, it's very much that place where you can just moan about how bad your day's been or things you've been anxious about or, you know, whatever the group's for.
Yeah.
And it enables you to deal with that separately and then function more normally so that when you do go and meet friends, you're not defined by... You're not having to deal with the same pressures because you've already unloaded that and it's still there, it might still be there a bit, and you know, some people will ask how you do it, but some people don't want to involve themselves with that side of it. Some people can't deal with ill people and that's fine, you know, some people, everyone's different. And as for, you know, talking about man flu, I think taking yourself to bed for a couple of days when you've got a bad cold or a throat infection or an ear infection, you know, when you've got a short-term illness, is and I think everyone's allowed to have that time when you're
I full hand to the forehead, woe is me when I've got man flu.
Oh yeah, but you know,
because it gets me stuff. You go downstairs and make me drinks.
And make your lem sip.
That's
different. If you know, you were still doing that after you were clearly better, then I'd be saying, you know, what are you playing at? And I think anyone would.
I've never. Maybe once.
No, but you know what
I know. I
think that's very different into. But then there's the. It's like, you know, when you think back when you're off school. I remember being off school when I was a kid because I had a stomach bug. And apart from not being able to keep any food down for any length of time and getting headaches. Like really bad headaches. It might have been migraine, I suppose. I don't know. Anyway, went to the doctors, didn't have any infection, didn't have a throat infection or anything. And the doctor had said, you know, I was going to buy you a magazine and your own bottle of pop and you can sit on the sofa and read your magazine and watch your favourite film or something like that. And you do kind of get a bit spoiled. And there's always that bit in your head that it's like you say... If you stay in bed, completely incapable, I'll bring you stuff, and I think there is that bit of it's nice being looked after.
I think a good way to sort of round it out, in my head, which I've been mulling over as we've been talking for the last hour, because it's a really really sensitive topic to try and unpick social media support and that kind of peer dynamic. And it's not just support for chronic illness or mental illness or anything like that. It's support groups or forums for anything. They are an incredibly powerful and useful resource, but there is an undercurrent which can be dangerous when certain behaviours are validated and encouraged, which might not necessarily be healthy for that person. That's when it becomes difficult, and that's when it becomes dangerous, and that's when I tend to withdraw, because I think maybe because I've been trained to see that more, or maybe it's because I've worked with people who are more susceptible to that kind of behaviour or manipulation, or you know, but it frightens the hell out of me, because I've seen where that goes. And it's not good.
No, and so it is unfortunate that there is that negative side to it, and some people will end up being put off completely. And I say it's a real shame, but I would be really interested to hear people's opinions, and have there been any specific online activities that have really worked for them, or things that haven't, and you know, it'd be really interesting just to get opinion on it, and you know, I'll bring back my opinions on things as
I would too, and I can think of certainly a couple of people who listen regularly who have first hand experience of that kind of dynamic. It, as I said, again, it's a very sensitive topic. We've tried very, very, very hard to deliberately be as balanced and as fair about this. I mean, I could speak candidly about some very unpleasant things that I've witnessed on support boards, which have led to further unpleasantness in the real world. Now is not the time or the place to do that. However, it might be something that we bring up later. But I think one thing to bear in mind is when you're on a support board, if you're in a room full of 1,000 people or 10,000 people or whatever, it's a big room, a certain percentage of those people will be psychopaths, will be sociopaths, will have a hidden agenda that you don't know about, that they're not there necessarily to support you, they're there for their own ends. And then if you take away their faces and you put them behind a computer, you don't know who they are or what they are or what they're doing. I mean, you just look at things like catfish and things like that. Some people do that, not necessarily because they are cruel or manipulative, because they are sociopaths, but sometimes because they're vulnerable and they have their own weaknesses and illnesses and issues that they're dealing with. You don't necessarily, not everybody on every support board is an altruist, that's all I'll say. And I think it's important to underline that not everybody is. A lot of people are, though, and I think that's where this subject gets muddied, I think.
It is something, it's very difficult to define, and I don't think that there will ever be, I don't think it's something that will always be an issue. And I think it's just tread carefully, really. And
do your research.
Do your research, and don't necessarily take everything at face value.
One thing we haven't really covered, which I think is interesting, which we may need to go into another episode, because we're running over an hour, but the cultural and geographical differences that you see on message boards. So we haven't talked about the insurance-based medical issues that you see in the States, and different cultural aspects and religious aspects to certain illnesses, which change the perspective and the way in which people communicate about those illnesses. But I think that could be an hour and a half each, so we'll touch on that in another episode. Feedback. If you've had any experiences of online support boards and social media based support, good and bad, especially good, to be honest, because, you know, we don't want to be frightening people into not.
Yeah.
That's the last thing we want to do. But I think it's important to highlight the fact that it doesn't always do what's said on the tin. So any positive feedback, any things you can recommend, absolutely do.
Yeah, that'd be
there's
great.
There's loads of really, great. Really good support groups for people. But again, do your research. Don't necessarily take everything you read at face value. If you get some advice online that you think resonates with you, search again that advice, see if that advice is backed up and evidence elsewhere. Build up your own opinion. And if you need to, go and speak to a doctor, a therapist, or somebody who can either prove, disprove, validate, or, you know, give you further advice.
That can be the problem with Googling, is that you get the result that people have visited the most.
Yeah.
And
it's not necessarily
necessarily the best, and sometimes going to page 2 and 3 can be useful.
Right. Well, every single pain that I've ever Googled is always basically body part location, cancer.
Dead.
So I've stopped doing that now.
WebMD is not WebMD always
your is
friend.
Not your friend. On that note, let's leave it there. But yeah, please do feedback. It would be really interesting to see how you feel about that. Also, your opinions on counselling and CBT.
Yes,
obviously, we spoke to Carl a few weeks ago on counselling. We'd like to hear more about that as well. So,
yes.
As ever, keep talking. And if you need to talk, you know where we are.
Bye.
Bye.